We are
going to embark on a journey.
Because I don't like standing still. First of all, let me challenge y'all a little bit. This is going to be a very difficult series that I really don't know how long it's going to take. Hunter challenged me to preach on the Sermon on the Mount. I've never done that before. It's a text that I have often excused and avoided because of what it says. There's three chapters in there, and the calling is high. And as a result, it's been easier to say that's impossible, or it's been easier to say that was intended for the Pharisees or people who have been trying to achieve the salvation through the law. It's much more difficult to say this is a calling to us. And there's been a lot of writings on, let's see if that works. All right, is that better? There's been a lot of writings, there's been a lot of sermons, there's been a lot of, both in the church and even outside of the church, there's been a lot of information about the Sermon on the Mount. And so we're going to dive into this, and I want everybody to understand. First of all, let me tell you this. If you got friends, invite them. All right? This is going to be something that I think people can wrap their mind around, as well as something difficult that should make us, each of us, want to spend a little bit of time contemplating. And let me say it this way. First of all, this is more of an introduction to the Sermon on the Mount. Sermon on the Mount is, you guys have heard it. I'm going to make a couple challenges to you over the course of this series, however long it takes. Hunter's a big nerd. Oh, he heard me. Shoot, he walked out right when I said that. And so over the years, I've started listening to some guys on Bible Project that are super nerds, and he gets a little bit from them. And so they started a series on Sermon on the Mount. Listened to that twice, their introduction, but then I found out in their introduction that it's going to take them a year to go through the Sermon on the Mount. Probably not going to take us that long, okay? So just be prepared for that. But I want to start by saying that it takes about 20 minutes to read the Sermon on the Mount, okay? It's about 20 minutes. Does anybody have 20 minutes a week? Start reading it, okay? I would like for you as a body to start reading that once a week. And there's going to come a time where I'm going to ask you to read it more than once a week. But right now, I'm going to ask you to start reading Matthew chapter 5 through Matthew chapter 7 once a week. Okay, because I think it's imperative that we start. Has anybody ever heard a Sermon on the Mount about it? Does anybody know what it says? A few, all right, maybe pieces of it, but not necessarily as a collection. Let me say this, that even a guy like Gandhi, anybody ever heard of a man named Gandhi? Yeah, brought a tremendous amount of transformation in India. Was Hindu by religion. He read the Sermon on the Mount the last 40 years of his life twice a day because of the teachings in it and the charter that he claimed, a charter for peace in it. But importantly, this morning, as we kind of start introducing this idea of the Sermon on the Mount, I want to introduce it from a different perspective, maybe from a perspective of having a deeper appreciation for it. Because over the years, I have, again, explained away a lot of the Sermon on the Mount, because when he says stuff like, the law says, thou shalt not murder, or thou shalt not covet. And I say, if you've even done that in your mind, that you have sinned. Well, as a Christian, what are we like? Yeah, thank goodness for Jesus, right? Thank goodness for grace. And there's an element that I think is valuable in terms of that, but the unfortunate aspect, even in my own existence, in my own life, I have discounted a lot of it because of grace. And so I think there's a danger in that, though, and I think there's been some heart searching for me in some of this, because I think it's imperative that we understand that we're going to be going through a lot of information in three short chapters, and you're going to say to yourself multiple times, did he really say that? Did he really call me to that? And as I've contemplated some of that and thought through some of that, they're on two separate occasions, we've talked about both of them in recent months. On two different occasions, one with I believe it's in John chapter 8, when the adulterous woman is brought before Jesus. And he challenges the crowd that's ready to stone him, because according to the law, this woman should be stoned. And he challenges them, whoever's without sin, throw the first stone. And y'all know that story. We've talked about that story. But at the very end of that story, Jesus has another one of these statements. Another one of these statements that seems improbable. It seems impossible. He says, where's your accusers? And she replies that they've all gone. He says, then go and sin no more. Whew. How do y'all feel about that? Did he really say no more? Or did he say cut back a little bit on it? No, he said no more. I don't like that verse. Y'all like that verse? Y'all are real serious this morning. We're thinking too hard, aren't you? And then at the pool of Bethesda, Jesus asks, has this interaction with this man. Do you really want to be healed? And he's like, well, everybody beats me into the pool. And the question was, you're at a place of Greek emphasis and Greek influence, and you're looking for healing in all the wrong places. Do you really want to be healed? And Jesus tells him to take up his mat and walk. And a later interaction with this man, he says, go. And sin no more. Man, did he really say that? Did he mean it? Those are some of the most haunting texts that I read. The challenge of that is, for me, it feels insurmountable. Anybody else with me on that? But he did say that. And it's so easy to read through Scripture and go, glad he was talking to her, or glad he was talking to him and not me. And it's easy to look at the Sermon on the Mount and go, I bet the Pharisees are really choking on his words, right? Anybody think that? But if we take a step back and look, that Jesus' teachings were so fundamentally different, right? He comes into the stage and he's not just teaching good moral ethics. There's a lot of misunderstanding in the Sermon on the Mount. Some of the misunderstandings that we see in this message is that it's a charter for peace, for national peace. We're never going to find a nation that would sign off on this. We see peace treaties signed all the time and they're broken. Could you imagine two nations signing this peace treaty? Because in it is some very difficult things. Another misconception of the Sermon on the Mount, it's not a plan of salvation. The plan of salvation is the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's the crucifixion. It's the resurrection. That's the gospel. But in this message, Jesus is calling someone to a different standard of life. And it's easy for me to go, well, he's talking to, it says in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 1, let's turn there real quick. Man, I'm all over this morning. I'm right now in Exodus, so give me a second. Verse 1, it says, seeing the crowds, he went up on the mountain. And when he sat down, his disciples came to him. And he opened his mouth and taught them, saying. So right here, we've got the scene is kind of set. But what I want you to hear in this is one of my misconceptions of the Sermon on the Mount is he's talking to the multitudes. No, he's talking to his disciples. Because this isn't a message that's received outside of, I give myself to you. Because when you look at this text in the three chapters of the Sermon on the Mount, you're going to look at it and you're going to go, it's impossible. And oftentimes when we face things of impossibility, we just avoid them. Anybody with me on that one? If you don't think you can do it, you just soon avoid it, then look at it. That's why I don't look at Matthew chapter 5 through 7 very often, except to make a reference here and a reference there. But to genuinely sit down and hear the words of Jesus, the calling of Jesus, he's talking to people who have left everything and chosen to follow him. Now, the crowd also hears him. But he's talking to his disciples. He's giving a message to people who have said, I choose you. And so it's kind of like in today's society where you have, you know, people in here, right? And they love Jesus and we want to live like Jesus. And we're hearing this message, but there's people even outside of Christ that are hearing the message of Christ. And so it's very similar. But I want you to understand that the intent of the Sermon on the Mount was towards the people that he was close with. He's sitting down and he's visiting with them. He's having a conversation with them. He's speaking directly into their existence, directly into their frustrations. Now, the parallelism, Hunter likes parallels, right? And so I'll go geek out for a second. There's a ton of parallels between Moses and Jesus. The first parallel is, they both had to flee from being killed as an infant. They were both called out of Egypt. They both came through water, Moses through the Red Sea, Jesus through his baptism, and entered the wilderness for temptation. Moses for 40 years, Jesus for 40 days. Moses receives the Ten Commandments on Mount Sinai. Jesus is on a mountain giving the Sermon on the Mount. Now, the differences. God gave instruction to the Israelite community in the wilderness not to even touch the mountain or they'd be killed. Jesus invites people. There's thunder. There's this scene around the Ten Commandments that you can just see the power of God. And I can imagine on when Jesus is giving the Sermon on the Mount that there's peace. There's this stillness. Can you imagine the amount of people that probably, because at this point, if we had to back up to Matthew chapter 4, Matthew gives us this quick synopsis where Jesus begins his ministry. Chapter 4, verse 23, he said, and he went throughout all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom and healing every disease and every affliction among the people. So his fame spread throughout all Syria. And they brought him all the sick, those afflicted with various diseases and pains, those oppressed by demons, those having seizures and paralytics. And he healed them. And great crowds followed him from Galilee and the Decapolis, and from Jerusalem and Judea, and from beyond the Jordan. And so you see that there are people that are following him around. But what I want you to understand is that he's got his people that have chosen to leave everything that they have and follow. This message is for them, but there's a lot of people hearing it. There's a lot of people hearing it. And the message really should, it's about the kingdom. I've spent several months talking about the kingdom. And this is about the kingdom. And so Jesus is communicating this mindset of kingdom thinking, right? I challenged y'all a couple months ago to have a kingdom mindset. Here you go. Here it is. This is kingdom mindset. Now, we can discount it, like so many of us, including myself, have done in life, and say it's impossible to do that. Thank goodness for Jesus. And so, unfortunately, we get to a place where we just discount it. We don't even look at it. But you have been called to live like Jesus. Jesus was the embodiment in human form of the message that he's fixing to give. And you have been called to that. Not so that you could shrink up. You know, I grew up for my early years in life. I grew up with a lot of hellfire and damnation from the pulpit. My suspicion is, it's much how a lot of y'all grew up. Where it was do and don't do. And this is an iPad, but the Bible was a rule book. Follow the rules. Did anybody grow up like I grew up? And then somewhere in my 20s, I slid over to another camp. Because that camp, does anybody ever have fun in that camp? Let's be honest. That camp's kind of intimidating, isn't it? So I slid over to this camp. This camp was the grace camp. Oh, Jesus forgives me. Grace. Peace. Anybody like that camp? That's a lot more fun in that camp. That camp has a tendency to look at the Sermon on the Mount and go, it's impossible. Just love Jesus more. What I'm telling you this morning is in the middle of these two camps is a passion and love for Jesus Christ and Him crucified that inspires me to live this way. Because it is impossible by my standard, but possible by His. I don't want us to discount this sermon that Jesus gives because we feel ill-equipped to live the way He's called us to live. One of the other differences in Moses and Jesus on Mount Sinai, you know, the commandment starts with "Thou shalt not," right? If you're a good Christian, you know all 10 of them, and you live by 4 of them. I'll let you pick which 4. That was a joke, y'all. Come on, man. Y'all are killing me. All right. When I say, you know, I told Lana just more recently, I've been working on my jokes, but they're just not landing right, you know? And so just work with me a little, all right? Make me feel a little bit better about myself. And the Sermon on the Mount starts with blessings. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Fundamental difference. It's been said that the Sermon on the Mount is the law of the New Testament. I don't want you to have that perspective. Because then we're looking at trying to live this way and we're forgetting about the reason that we're living this way. See, so often in our lives we get things out of order. And I think growing up in the church, oftentimes that was my perspective. I was constantly getting things out of order. I have to do this so that this happens. I have to live this way so that Jesus loves me. No, it said, but while they were still sinners, Jesus died for the wicked. Don't get it out of order. You get it out of order, you're going to be super frustrated your whole life because you're going to be trying to live by a standard that's impossible without the blood of Jesus Christ. But with the blood of Jesus Christ, with the grace that He offers, there's a standard, there's a calling that He has called His followers to live by. He wants us to live by kingdom standards. Whose kingdom? His kingdom. What's that look like? Matthew chapter 5 through 7. And when you're intimidated by Matthew chapter 5, verse 7, like I am intimidated by those three chapters, I need you to think about Jesus and the calling that you have received, the message of reconciliation to God, the desire to live differently than you currently live, not for the purpose of garnering favor with God, but because of God. We need to get out of the mindset that we're garnering some sort of favor by God and start getting into the mindset that He has radically changed my life. He has granted me an opportunity with Him in eternity. Therefore, I choose to live differently. In The Chosen, Lana and I got to, I'd listened to it already, and Lana and I listened to it again last night. Not The Chosen, but the first episode on Bible Project, and they interview the gentleman that has directed The Chosen. If you haven't watched it, I still super encourage you. It's powerful. And they're talking through with him some of what Jesus talks about and how the first three series are kind of leading up to this apex moment, this true north, this place, this position of Jesus teaching, and not just teaching, but speaking into the lives of the people who have chosen to follow him. And in this moment, you see the impact and the deep impact, because he's calling them out of who they formerly were and calling them into a new birth. This is impossible. Matthew chapter 5 through verse 7 is impossible without Jesus. Doesn't work. It's not attainable outside of Christ. John Stott writes, "The standard of the Sermon on the Mount are neither readily attainable by every man, nor totally unattainable by any man. To put them beyond anyone's reach is to ignore the purpose of Christ's sermon. To put them within everybody's is to ignore the reality of man's sin. They are attainable, but only by those who have experienced new birth." So as we go through this study, a popular thought in my mind, therefore I'm guessing it's going to be a popular thought in your mind: did he really say that? Did he really call me to that? Because I'm going to be honest with you. Some of the teachings in these three chapters are difficult. But they weren't set there for you to go, "That's not achievable, I need Jesus." They were set there to show you the cost of being one of his disciples. The cost of living differently. The cost of saying, "I choose Jesus every day and I'm going to strive in these areas," because Jesus is called. This is the embodiment of who he is. He's not preaching at them. He's telling them who he is. Y'all hear that? He's telling them who he is. One thing y'all have heard me say for years now is that when Jesus reveals something of himself to you, he's revealing to you what should also be true of you. He's saying, "This is who I am. I need you to be a reflection of who I am." What's that look like? Looks like this. In The Chosen, as the depiction of Jesus struggling with this sermon and kind of thinking through it, and how do I articulate it? I can kind of sympathize. I appreciated their interpretation of this. Maybe right, maybe wrong, I don't know, but I appreciated it, because sometimes I sit and try to think, how can I articulate this so that it's received or heard or understood? And they kind of show clips of Jesus kind of navigating this sermon and trying to perfect it so that people could understand it. And he's struggling with Matthew and trying to communicate with Matthew about, "I don't know how to start." You know, sometimes starting is hard. That's why oftentimes I start with a joke that y'all don't laugh at, because starting is sometimes the most difficult thing. Well, sometimes finishing is too, as y'all already know with me. I don't like finishing. But starting is hard. And I can see Jesus kind of wrestling with this. How do I start? And he goes to Matthew late at night. And this is in The Chosen. Again, this is embellished, if you will. There's some license, what do you call it? Artistic license. Thank you. See, Hunter? I asked Mom, just so you know. There's some artistic license, but I can see it just makes sense, because I can see Jesus struggling with, how do I do this? And he goes to Matthew in the middle of the night and says, I got it. It's the map This is the map to find me. These people, this is the map. If you find these people, you're going to find me. This is the map. I don't know about y'all, but I want to be on that map. I want to be on that map. I want people to know Jesus because they know me. If that's going to be the case, I can't excuse or dismiss these three chapters. Because he really did say that. And he really meant it. This morning, I want to challenge y'all. As we, you know, I'm going to be here next week. I'm going to be gone a week. And so I think it's fitting that since Hunter gave me this idea, he's going to have an opportunity to preach on some too. Because he's more nerdy than I am. But as we embark in this journey, my challenge for us is to know that this isn't what we attain. This isn't what we chase. We chase Jesus Christ, but the result of relationship with Jesus Christ is going to look a lot like these three chapters. You're going to live a lot like these three chapters because of the relationship that you desire with Jesus Christ. We don't chase the Sermon on the Mount. We chase Jesus, and that Sermon on the Mount is evidence of who we are. And as we live life, it should be an evidence of who we are. People should know Jesus or find Jesus because they found you. And that's powerful. But as we embark in this study, bring people. All right? Because as I think about this, as I spent time this weekend contemplating this series and contemplating starting this and how do I introduce this and how I'm thinking about Jesus sitting down on the side of a hill, thinking about the people that are closest to Jesus sitting down, and he's speaking directly into their lives, Linda. He's dealing with personal things as he speaks, and it's intimate, right? And I want that to be this way as we go through this series. But then there's this other crowd that have been following Jesus around. They're kind of intrigued. They're interested. They're fascinated. They're not buying in yet, but they're listening. What better thing to invite people to than an opportunity to be one of the crowd? Maybe not fully vested in who Jesus is yet, but willing to listen to what he's got to say. Willing to hear the calling. So I'm going to challenge y'all to bring people. I'm going to challenge y'all once a week, read these three chapters. Let it stir in you. Let it stir an emotion in you, a struggle in you, because I think that struggle's good. Let it build something in you, because it should build a desire to love Jesus even more. Not a, man, I don't want nothing to do with this dude if I got to live like that. So this morning, I want to challenge y'all with those things. I'm glad you're here. Light crowd. I hope everybody gets to feeling better. And tell them they all missed the introduction. So no more introductions. You just have to regurgitate it. So thank you all for being here this morning. If there's anything that we can do for you, I'd ask that you come as Hunter leads us in an invitation song.